Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, we are rolling, and you're making banging noises over there for some reason.
Keeping myself awake.
And I'm not sure. Wow.
I'm sticking myself with a poker.
Nice. Well, here we are in the studio, and first of all, we're glad to be back in the studio. We're glad to be back recording again. We've taken a little hiatus, and we are back. And So anyway, that's I'm Tom Peterson.
And Dean Foster.
And we have Torin with us today, our producer.
Hello.
Hey,
Tor.
We're all in studio. Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your hello there, Dean.
You didn't.
I didn't?
No.
Oh, I tried to. all right, well, so we've been trying to figure out what the heck we should talk about in this podcast. And I'm thinking we should talk about something that is currently notorious, the cymbals.
Of?
Well, I'm not talking about an instrument in a band. I'm talking about, thank you. Thank you.
Cymbal section came to life.
Well, actually, we'll probably need that from time to time.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm all over it. I played percussion in high school, so yeah, I'm all over it.
Got a snare drum available?
I do, actually. Not
nice.
Far from here.
How about a penny whistle?
Don't. I'll find it, though.
Penny Whistle. Remember her?
I think I dated her in the seventh grade.
In the seventh grade. It's seventh always grade. The seventh grade. That was a busy year for you.
Oh, it was a very busy year.
Yeah, seventh grade. After that, it was all downhill. Well. No, it's not cymbals like you crash in a band or an orchestra, but cymbals like symbology, like what Dan Brown has made a lot of money writing about.
Oh, well, you know, there's a cultural piece to this.
By the way, Mr. Brown, if you would like to contact us, we will put you on the podcast, probably. I'm sorry, Dean.
There's
go
a
right
cultural
ahead.
Piece to this.
Is there? Because that's amazing.
Culture has its symbols. There are cultural symbols for everything all around the world. It's probably one of the most unique aspects of just being human. The humans have been creating symbols since the dawn.
Maybe even the dawn.
Even the dawn.
Might be it.
Even the words that you and I are using right now.
Yes.
Are symbols. They're just nothing but symbols.
They're nothing but symbols. They lead to pictures, visualizations, actions.
Exactly.
Things and like that.
The meaning of a word, you know, is the symbol of the meaning.
You get
a word is
the
symbol of
the
symbol. of its own meaning.
The symbol means nothing on its own. People have to give something to it in order for it to mean something.
Exactly. You know, this is
we summed that up quickly.
This
didn't
is
right.
All right,
no,
well,
we didn't.
Good night,
we
everybody.
Just, no, we just opened the door.
Could somebody shut the door? It's killing the sound in here.
This is what this is semiotics. The
Excuse
whole
me?
A whole field of linguistics.
I think
and...
you can take something for that now.
Some people would.
I'll take your local pharmacist.
And well, you know, there's an interesting, very fascinating.
We'll be the judge of that.
phenomenon. I think it's called semantic satiation. Semantic satiation.
It's easy for you to say.
And it proves that the word is merely a vehicle for symbolizing the concept that the meaning stands for of the word. Like, here's the phenomenon.
Okay.
If you say a word over and over and over and over and over again,
it loses its meaning.
It loses its meaning, and you just hear the sound of the word and the sound.
And you can't even remember how to spell it.
Right.
And the word becomes very weird.
Right. That's right.
Like, if I say weird, 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 weird. This is semantic satiation.
He does that again. Hit him with the poker.
Okay, I'll get my poker out.
Yeah.
It proves the fact that the word is just the symbol for the meaning behind the word.
Right. Uh-huh. It is. Yeah.
So how does
no
this...
No one's arguing with you.
I'm not looking for an argument, but if you want an argument...
Stop fighting!
You and me, outside!
He's
got a poker!
Oh, look out!
This is not good. Or maybe it's really good. We're not sure.
So what's the cultural piece to this?
I don't know. That's your
game. Cultures use symbols all the time.
Yeah? Okay, so so give me an idea of what you might use a symbol for in a culture. Why would a culture use a symbol?
Well, that
because it seems like an indirect way of communicating.
That's right. And so where's the benefit of that?
I don't know. Again, I think that's his job, isn't it?
I think so.
Okay. Many times what it does is it allows you to say something or imply something without actually having to say it, because actually saying it is going to get you into big surus, big trouble.
Thank you for interpreting a Yiddish word. Small part of the audience out there.
So if you can't say it directly, you use a symbol that implies it. Right. So, you know, one of the things that comes to mind, and we've discussed this in other episodes, is hand gestures. This is the most obvious symbol.
Okay.
If you don't say something, you can't, I'm not responsible for having said it, but I indicated it with a gesture.
Mm. Sure.
And we're all familiar with the scatological hand gestures.
Sure. Some are acceptable and some are far less acceptable.
And the fact that the same gesture might have different meanings in different cultures.
Right.
And I think we discussed this in previous episodes.
We have discussed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, the same thing. So that's one of the reasons, to avoid association of guilt with something that's going to get you in trouble.
Right. Okay.
You know, so you say it's a code.
Yeah.
It's a code. Now, the trouble with codes is that you have to understand the code in order to be able to interpret it the way the sender meant.
Right.
So unless I'm also part of that information, if I'm a member of the same tribe, if I'm a citizen of the same country, if I'm on the same side of an issue as you are, I probably know the code.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not, I'm outside of that.
Yeah.
And being outside of it is good for the insiders, because they're not going to get in trouble with the outsiders. Mm-hmm. But being on the outside is also not so good for the code, because it means that not everybody understands it.
I have no idea what side I'm on now.
Am I in? Am I out?
I think I'm outside.
I think right now, yes.
Am I?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, get that door open and let me back
a lot,
in.
There's a coded message. There's a
line. Yeah, that's not coded at all. I hate to say this, but I'm... think I actually followed you on that.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, if I were you, I'd rewind and go back at it again.
Just listen again.
Yeah.
And listen again and listen again until all the words lose their meaning.
And then speed it up
whatsoever.
So that Dean sounds like a chipmunk. That's even better. Okay.
It'll look like we have a billion listeners. So please, go ahead. Listen many times.
We don't. Hold on. What?
So many things are codes. How we dress is a code.
Okay.
How we wear our hair is a code. Hair and is remarkable for its coding.
Really?
For the message that it sends. The way we choose to wear our hair, hairstyles. It's coded to indicate whether or not you are of a certain group or not of a certain group. Of the colors that we use to dress with, the colors that we use to identify our identity or association with a particular group.
Uh-huh.
Throughout history, we've got tons and tons of different examples of this. I mean, I think back to the War of the Roses in England in the 14th century, 14th, 1500s. You had the War of the Roses, the white rose and the red rose.
Right.
And so everybody knows which side you're on. You
right.
know? In, symbols are like emotions. Symbols are to society as to emotions are to individuals. They're shortcuts to understanding something. In other words, individual emotions through evolution gave us the ability to feel something in response to a particular situation, which allowed us action to deal with that.
Right. It becomes that you can group feel it at that point, and you're part of that group.
Right. Well, that's where culture comes in.
Okay.
Right. But even pre-culture, just as when we were Neanderthals, the whole idea...
When you were a Neanderthal. Go ahead.
I have 6% Neanderthal.
You had to tell us that we knew.
And I think the average is like 4%.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I wondered why you were always walking around picking up berries and things like that and eating them.
Don't short sell the Neanderthals.
Well, I did. I actually short sold them some of my stock.
Yeah,
you sold it the wrong time.
They're
pretty stupid. Well, you know, they don't know the stock exchange.
That's probably fine.
They don't went up. Right.
That's right. It went up immediately. Yep. Smart move on my part.
Well done.
Oh, well.
Well, so emotions are shortcuts to giving us information as to what to do in a particular situation. Instead of having to intellectually try to figure out, oh, what's the best thing for me to do given this situation? Mm-hmm. Our emotions give us action. Now, sometimes we act on our emotions and it doesn't solve the problem. It makes the problem worse, which is why we've developed intelligence subsequent to the evolutionary development of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Symbols do the same thing.
Yeah.
They are shortcuts to all of us inside the tribe identifying with the tribe and everybody outside the tribe saying, whoops, they're on the inside and I'm on the outside, or they're a part of them and not part of me.
Yeah.
So, let me see if I can take this in a direction that goes to if it's a very visible one, not ones that you're trying to do as a subterfuge of some kind to get away with something or to overthrow something or anything like that, but a very obvious form of symbolism, then we could look at national flags.
Yeah, exactly. That is a perfect example of symbols, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And let's take a look at the current situation with Ukraine.
Okay.
Right. The colors of the Ukrainian flag, yellow and
blue.
Blue.
Aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Right. It flew out of my mind for a second. I was thinking of the fact that
the Neanderthal part of it is in the mind.
We had just gone through.
It went berries.
We just gone through Easter and Passover, and I went to a Passover Seder last week, and they had the egg, which is a symbol, a very ancient symbol on the Passover plate of the rebirth of spring.
Right.
But the host of the Seder dyed the Easter egg the Ukrainian colors.
Mm. Ah.
Because it is a holiday, a festival of freedom.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So those colors, the blue is the sky, it's the symbol for the sky, and the yellow is the symbol of the sunflower, which grows all over Ukraine.
Huh.
Okay.
And these two natural forces create what is fundamentally, I think, part of the reason for the current situation, because the Ukraine has always been the breadbasket of Russia, if not the world.
Uh-huh.
So it's been the farmland, not only sunflowers, but wheat and all sorts of things would be grown and produced in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And without it, because it's so far south geographically than Russia, so much further south than Russia geographically. If you compare the production in the Ukraine of food with the production of food in Russia to the north, it vastly overwhelms the Russian numbers. Russians have been basically surviving on Ukrainian food, on Ukrainian sunflowers, on Ukrainian wheat.
Yeah.
And so the colors that are used in the symbols of Ukraine represent this.
Mm.
And if you understand the power of these symbols, you know, Ukrainians, for them, the sunflower is an incredibly powerful symbol.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the symbols in Russia, a powerful symbol in Russia that I think is iconic to understanding Russian culture is the Matryoshka doll.
Mm.
The doll within the doll within the doll within
right.
the doll.
Right.
Right.
Nesting doll.
The nesting doll. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so you... Why is this iconically symbolic of Russian culture? Because I think one of the essential things you need to understand about Russian culture is that there's always this superficial outer shell, and it hides an inner shell, which hides an even deeper inner shell, and the baby inside the deepest part is very, very fragile. And very, very weak and needs to be protected by these levels layers that keep going to the outs, out and out and out.
Sure.
So the blustery, over-the-top, super emotional, bombastic, rhetorical outside.
Yeah.
The threatening outside. The use of the weapons. The constant threats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is all an exterior cover.
Mm.
To protect that inner creature.
That's
body.
That's what's
whatever.
Driving it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Huh.
we look at Russia, Russia is a very large country. There's got to be, as there is in other large countries, the United States, China, others, there's going to be differences across there. Moscow is a far more Western city than much of the rest of the country.
Geographically, it is, yes.
Yeah. And so is it, I don't know, maybe it's not easy to know this because it is still Russia and it's somewhat secretive. But across the country, is there a reason to believe that is there a disconnect from the forces that are running things now and making these decisions? And is it symbolized in any way in that, or is that just another enigma of Russia that we really don't know much about?
Well, you know, vast lands within Russia are super underpopulated. Mm. I mean, we're looking at tundra, we're looking at, you know, a lot of just vast land area, but not too many people. Right. And then there are other areas where there's lots and lots of people.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
I think your point is well taken, Tom. You do have Moscow trying very hard to keep this vast empire within an empire.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Matryoshka doll again.
Yeah.
Even within Russia as a nation state today, Moscow still has difficulty controlling every part of that landmass, and the fear always is that somebody somewhere is going to break away from our control, and mm-hmm. so we've really got to maintain a lot of control, and therefore it's a natural crucible for autocracy.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize that never ever in the history of Russia have there been any moments of democracy, except very short-lived sparks here and there, just before, during, and just after the revolution and the civil war.
Mm-hmm.
But it's inconsequential, really, because they went straight from feudalism and czarism,
right,
to basically communism,
right,
to basically gangsterism, which is what we have today,
right. Yeah.
So there's no tradition whatsoever for holding anything together other than steely autocracy.
Mm, right.
So to your point, yes, Moscow is fearful that it will lose control of what's going on within its realms, and sees the current situation as proof, the failure of the Soviets, the collapse of the Soviets, as proof that without this kind of steely autocracy, they are in fact going to collapse.
Mm.
And the evidence of that for them is that the West is out there circling around, ready to take advantage of any situation where they can undermine the authority of the Russians in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And Ukraine represents that, mm-hmm. because the majority of the people in the Ukraine voted to be part of the West.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. So Russia can simply not allow that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, the symbols of Tsarist Russia was the two-headed eagle. It's still the Russian state seal, I think.
Hmm. Okay.
So the eagle is always looking east to make sure that everybody there is under the control of Moscow.
Yeah.
And also west.
Yeah.
To make sure that the West doesn't do anything to stop us from maintaining the hard grip that we need to have over the lands in which there are Russians.
Sure. All right.
So symbols, a double-headed eagle.
Double-headed
right?
eagle. There we go.
Yeah.
Coat of arms of Russia.
Coat of arms of Russia, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And the producer finally did something.
You're welcome.
That's good.
But it's interesting now that the symbol, this idea of symbols during this time of war with Ukraine is becoming a code, this becoming coded language for which side you're on.
Hmm. Right. So what are some of those symbols that we're seeing that are showing us both sides, I guess?
Well, you know, I think the Russian Z.
Yeah.
Mm,
I've seen
where
that.
Where does that come from? I don't understand. I've never seen
Do
the etymology
know?
Of it.
I mean, I can take a look, but I remember hearing it was sort of unknown.
It's not like a World War Z reference, is it?
It could be.
It could be.
That could be a theory. Yeah, I'll take a look. I think it is not entirely sure.
Okay.
So that's being used to symbolize support for the war.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But the need for coded symbolism, if you're against the war, particularly in Russia,
right,
is absolutely powerful. So I've been hearing about different codes that have developed to indicate by Russians who do not support the war that they are not supporting Moscow or Putin, I should say, but they're against the war. Russians are very proud of the contributions that they've made to the world, and Russian culture has been, in many aspects of Russian culture, literature, the arts particularly, and I think of ballet, become symbols of Russian contributions to
sure.
the world.
Sure.
They're very proud of the ballet.
Sure, and, yeah, they should be.
Tchaikovsky's great ballet, Swan mm-hmm. Lake, mm-hmm. is used and has been used historically in Russia.
I remember hearing that.
In many different ways. Politically, it became used as a symbol, as a tool for the fact that the government, whenever one of the leaders died and the decision makers in Moscow didn't know who the next leader was going to be,
right,
they played Swan Lake on state media. And so every time you heard Swan Lake being played, it meant that government catastrophe has happened. Somebody, our great leader has died, and we're awaiting the next news as to who's going to be running the country. And so the ballet and the symbol of the ballet dancer has been used by those against the war as a statement that the government is in trouble.
Okay,
and we're going to have to change that government. Or that government needs to change, or will change.
So is it being used now?
I believe so. I think the protesters have been doing that. Okay. Now, because of the very punitive new laws that have come down where you're not supposed to protest the war
right.
in Russia.
Right.
Those who are protesting the war are getting rounded up and jailed.
Yes.
So I think I was reading about protesters who, instead of showing up with protest signs, no war, they were showing up with signs that said no first letter of the Russian word for war, and then the remaining letters indicated by an asterisk.
Oh.
Okay.
The remaining Cyrillic letters.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I heard this, on a podcast. There was a podcast from NPR, Rough Translation.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the Russian security forces are looking... So this is an education for them.
Mm.
And then they have to reinterpret whatever the code is as to whether or not it's worthy of an arrest. Mm. So they're learning whatever the new code is. And the trick is, of course, to try to learn that code faster than anybody else
right.
does. And before it becomes...
Then you move on.
Then you force them to move on. And every culture's got its symbols. I mean, Torin, you were in Hong Kong.
Yeah. A few years ago.
During the strikes.
The protests that were happening there. Yeah, when you were talking about colors as symbols, I was remembering my friend who I was visiting, who had lived there for many years, was saying how red is symbolized pro-Beijing, which makes sense. Yellow symbolized pro-democracy. And blue represent pro-police. So it was similar to pro-China with the authorities.
And didn't the protests initially start with the symbol of the umbrella?
Yes, right. And yep, it was the umbrella movement.
Mm-hmm. Right. And why was the umbrella chosen as the symbol?
Yeah. But I can look it up.
Please do.
I will. But yes, it was. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so those are very powerful symbols, and like you're talking about, folks, when they saw the certain colors, and it would be outside different restaurants and be in people's clothes, and they knew, okay, these are folks that I can relate to. And
but let me just jump in for a second. I'm wondering if with the symbols like that, then depending on where everything goes, what
you
happens,
mean how this conflict works out with
this conflict or any conflict over in the past, with depending on where it ends up. And of course, that's an ongoing conflict with Hong Kong also. And where it ends up, those symbols can at some point become iconic and become part of the culture in some ways, right?
Yes, absolutely. And then they become institutionalized as usually the victor's symbols.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That they would have those as something that, and I'm wondering if it's a failure, if those symbols just go by the wayside and they get, or get put over here in the file that says symbols not to be used in the near
future. These usually become taboo.
Yeah.
Or get outlawed. Overnight.
The swastika.
Explicitly outlawed.
The swastika was nothing more than just an ancient Hindu symbol.
Right.
Right, right. It's been used before.
Of course. Sure. And then it became corrupted by the Nazis. Then it became verboten. I mean, you can't do it.
No, you can't.
Absolutely not. So the symbol itself has no meaning whatsoever, but it's the meaning that the symbol represents.
What you apply to it.
Precisely.
Yes.
And that's what culture does. Culture says, I'm going to give this symbol a meaning.
Yes.
And that's where it suddenly becomes very, very powerful.
Sure. Right. So I remember now my friend did tell me this. So umbrellas were popular in the protests because they could be used to protect, people could protect themselves against tear gas being fired by the police. They served a purpose and then they became a symbol from that.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yeah. The Z, by the way, in Russia. So there are theories, that's not clear, but there were Zs put on the Russian military tanks to avoid friendly fire. And so it's believed that it just came, and it just really, the Z stood out.
So the Z was saying, just it's us, not them, and so leave us alone.
Right. Why wouldn't they use the Cyrillic R?
So again, it served a purpose. I don't know. But it seemed to serve a purpose, and so then it just became a symbol for
That's a good question. It may have meant something else also within all of that.
Yeah, it seems to be unclear. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know at this stage.
Yep.
Huh.
Well, why are we talking about symbols and culture?
Why?
Because...
Oops! Your culture's showing. Yeah, we decided to wait till the end to do it this time.
Forgot about that.
Oh, wow. You know what? You know what also?
Oops, something else is showing too. Yeah.
There certainly is. A lot showing. Something's sticking out of here.
We were just too into the conversation.
Oh, man. Wow.
Well, we are of a certain generation, and we are, at least I am.
Well, speak for yourself over there.
And, you know, what were the cultural symbols in our generation? Because in my generation, I can vividly remember the confusion and the intensity of the 60s.
Well, there's one major one that was
And that was driven by symbols.
Yeah, there was a lot, but there was one that was the predominant one. There was one.
Which one?
Was the peace sign.
The peace sign.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that was the one that was the dominant
one. And the peace sign, by the way, was what? Because it's not universal.
What do you mean, was what?
In the U.S., what was the peace sign?
Oh,
was it a hand gesture? Was it a...
No, it was a hand gesture, and it was a drawn circle with a
disarmament symbol.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion. Again, you go back to what we're talking about the Z, there's a lot of discussion on where that sign inside the circle comes from. Some people, it's the foot of a dove. Some people, there's a few different things. It really doesn't matter. All that matters is what you were talking about before.
What it means.
What does it mean to you?
It's a symbol, right?
Yes. Yeah. What does it mean? Because a lot of people, when we were growing up, there was a lot of people that sign meant things they did not like.
Sure.
They were afraid of, and that they did not like them. And then you can look back at it in kind of the quaint way of looking at the 60s and the early 70s and think, isn't that cool? But it really, honestly, at that time, it was so far from just being cool. It meant a lot. And it meant a lot on both sides.
Sure.
And there was a lot of pushback on that and a lot of dislike about the peace sign as well.
And the
hand figure of the
two fingers up, palm
with your
side
palm
towards
you. Yes.
Yeah, like it has to be palm out.
Saying two, yes.
Palm in is a whole
other thing. Well, in England, that was a problem.
In Britain, but
In the United States, nobody cared. But in here, it was...
Right,
but it was that
two
anyway.
Beers
that,
or
that is the peace sign. It's the should
be palm out.
It's like
out.
Showing the number two like that with your palm toward whoever.
Churchill's
you're
V for victory.
Right.
It was from Churchill.
Yes, because if he did it the other way, it was which he probably did to Hitler also.
But, right.
And if you don't know what that means you haven't gone through all of our podcasts.
Go back to a prior episode.
You've got to go back to the beginning
with the hand gestures
and check out the hand gestures. Here's a hint. It has nothing to do with the Japanese toilet, okay?
Mm.
There you go. But
as far as we know,
as far as we know.
Well, I remember as going through hearing it back then in the 60s, the peace sign, the disarmament sign that I think you're referring to, which looks like the dove's foot.
Yes, the dove's foot pointing down, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that was, I think, originally used in Britain back in the 50s, even before the 60s, during the beginnings of the disarmament movement.
Uh-huh.
And Bertrand Russell was actually one of the leaders of that
disarmament movement. You're talking like missiles and
things
like
nuclear
that.
Disarmament.
That started, yes, it started to build up after World War II.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the vertical sign was the missile. The vertical.
Right, okay.
And then it was basically an entendee symbol superimposed over the missile.
Okay.
And.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what. Anyway.
That's a possibility.
What's
too.
What's an entendee? What is that?
Entendee. You know, in Europe, the road signs where you can't enter, it's a circle with a diagonal slash.
Gotcha.
Do not enter.
Except it doesn't go all the way across. And
I use the French version.
Wow. What a show off. You know what?
Pas de problème.
You know what? We're going to have to talk more about this.
Can we go here? No.
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 No. Which is, clearly they use that a lot in France.
That's French for no.
That's right. Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Love it when he speaks French.
I know.
I love
too.
It.
That's great.
You know, but look, clearly there's another episode in this because.
Well, you know, we've just been discussing symbols and I guess because of current events, Ukraine, we started discussing symbols of protest.
Right.
But there's symbols of so many things.
Right.
Well, sure.
Right.
Well, I mean, there's lots of different movements which cross borders. And are approached in many different ways, which is another area we can get into at some point. Because you've got, we can talk about what's happened in the United States as far as things like different movements, whether it has to do with race or it has to do with gender or it has to do with choice or any of those types of things.
Sure.
Yep. And any of those things, and they're going to have symbols with them, which they will find very powerful, and again, others will find disturbing for whatever
reason.
I'm going to go way out there and say that everything, everything we do, every word we say, every gesture we make, every article of clothing that we put on, every color that we choose, every piece of food that passes through our lips, everything we do, every decision we make in every given moment has all been pre-programmed through our culture. Is there free will? Yes. We can talk about the role of free will in culture.
You're blowing my mind.
But that's how much we are coded and to some degree controlled by our culture.
Coding, got a story about that.
Coding as a symbol, not the winter coating, but coding.
Or coding on a computer.
Right, or coding on a computer.
Right, not ones and zeros.
From your generation, that's what you would think. Right?
I'm a millennial, so that's okay.
So, coding in general, all of human activity is a code. I'm sending you signals about so many things just sitting here opposite you talking about this.
And I'm a little disturbed by it.
We can't look you in the eye.
I could say very disturbed, but yeah, sure. Okay. Well, you can go out on that limb right there and you can say that. And I'm going to go home and I'm going to pull the sheets over my head and I'm never going to move again.
And that's a code for something.
Oh, it is. Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, got me again. Just when I thought
I'll buy
I was
that.
Out.
I'll buy it.
He pulled me back in.
And what you do under those sheets is a code.
All right. Now we're moving
on. Definitely don't
need
to hear about
that. It's time to wrap this
puppy up. I meant how you sleep.
Oh, of course. Of course you do. Sure. Sure. Uh-huh. Thanks for ruining it for everyone.
I mean, what direction are you
facing?
That's
a code, too. And, well, wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know.
I'm in the group of not wanting to hear more about that.
No. People are phoning in right now, actually, and saying.
I didn't know we were taking calls.
We're not. We're not even broadcasting live.
Oh,
so
okay.
People are knowing this is happening.
How'd they get our number?
But if you'd like to comment.
Yes. If you, we do have ways
just
you can get
hold of
us.
Yell at your phone or whatever you're using to listen to this.
Just scream out the window.
And if you want to find out what direction Tom sleeps in, just let us know.
I've put a camera up in my room.
Oh, no.
And I'm going online now, so you'll be able to see me. And now that alone should be a symbol of just absolute dread and fear.
We need coding to make sure that never gets out.
Yes, in a coat, maybe.
Lots of coding.
Lots of coats. Just pile them up on top
please,
of me.
We beg you.
All right, look it. We're going to wrap this one up, but we'll revisit symbols. And
at some point. Yeah.
Maybe the whole drum kit at some point.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
We're taking a break.
Now,
you got one
finally.
Job.
The percussion section was taking a
one freaking job.
They should really stop smoking. Thing. It's not good for you.
I thought he was asleep facing the other direction.
Put my claves away.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Dean Foster, it's great to be back in studio with you again.
Terrific. Terrific.
Terrific. You're saying that about yourself?
Yes,
and
it's nice to have you here.
Oh, great. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. There's a symbol in that, but we'll leave it alone for now.
That was code.
It wasn't coded at all.
Yeah,
it was pretty blatant.
It was pretty
actually.
Explicit, yeah.
And Torin, good to have you here, too.
Thank you.
And I'm Tom Peterson, since nobody else wants to say my name. And by the way, oops, your culture's showing. Smell ya.
Okay, listen, the way to get hold of us is oopscultureshow@gmail.com. And our Twitter handle is oopscultureshow. Whether this is the first episode or the third episode or whatever episode that you've listened to, you should really subscribe. That's the best way to go, really, honestly.
I know what I'm talking about.
All right, so just subscribe through iTunes or through wherever you get your podcasts from. Subscribe. Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.